From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. To be out in the world these days, you get the sense from most people that the COVID-19 pandemic is over. But no matter how much we want to be done with the virus that causes coronavirus disease, the virus is not yet done with us. Cases are again climbing across the country, in part owing to the Omicron subvariant known as BA5. Right now, it makes up the majority of new cases in the U.S., and Illinois is no exception. On Friday, the CDC reported that 94 counties in the state are rated at high or medium community level, their metric for assessing not just disease spread, but also hospitalizations and other factors in the community. But if you click through to the more straightforward community transmission map, all but one of Illinois' counties are glowing bright red, high transmission. And test positivity rates are also really high, which suggests a significant underreporting of cases. Dr. Bob Watcher, a physician at the University of California, San Francisco, told NPR's Morning Edition that BA5 is highly transmissible and can sidestep immunity associated with prior infections.
Not only is it more infectious, but your prior immunity doesn't count for as much as it used to. And that means that the old saw that I just had COVID a month ago, and so I have COVID immunity superpowers, I'm not going to get it again, that no longer holds.
Indeed, I have a family member who got COVID and then 19 days later got COVID again. Meanwhile, there is growing concern across Illinois about monkeypox. State health officials are keeping a close eye on the rising number of cases. Just this weekend, the World Health Organization declared monkeypox a global health emergency, a decision that could spur further investment in prevention of and treatment for the disease. If you're new to monkeypox, it's a virus similar to smallpox. Monkeypox is not as transmissible as compared to smallpox, which through global vaccination efforts was eradicated in 1980. But some experts worry the monkeypox virus could mutate and become a greater threat to humans. Some of the symptoms of monkeypox include fever, headaches, muscle aches, a lack of energy, and a rash that resembles pimples or pus-filled blisters all over the body. The CDC says 99% of people infected by monkeypox would survive, but the infection can be fatal in children under the age 8, people with compromised immune systems, and those who are pregnant or breastfeeding. Here in Illinois, to help in the fight against monkeypox, the Department of Public Health is distributing vaccines to those who are at higher risk of exposure, but the demand for the vaccine is outweighing the supply. Joining us now to talk about all this is a panel of reporters who've been covering these diseases. Meredith Howard is a service journalist for the Belleville News Democrat in Belleville, Illinois, just outside St. Louis. Meredith, thank you for being with us today on The 21st Show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is Jake Sheridan. He's a news reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Jake, welcome to The 21st Show to you as well.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Also with us, Steph Whiteside. She's a reporter for Side Effects Public Media as well as WSIU Public Broadcasting in Carbondale. Steph, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, the number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. So, Meredith, I want to start with you in the Metro East. What are local health officials saying about the state of the COVID-19 pandemic in that part of Illinois?
So the CDC currently recommends masking indoors and on public transportation in St. Clair County, where the BND is based, and in more than 20 other Southwest and Southern Illinois counties that are at high COVID community levels. These counties include Calhoun, Jersey, Madison, Clinton, and more. In St. Clair County, test positivity is over 20% as of Friday, and the total case rate is up just over 6% from the previous week. The number of tests performed in the area is down slightly, while test positivity has still managed to increase by a little bit more than 4%. And then in addition to the high-level counties, all other Southern Illinois counties minus Washington are at a medium level right now.
What do you see? So the CDC, they recommend wearing a mask anywhere there's this high transmission level in a community. Do you see people following that advice when you're out and about?
I think it depends on the area that you're at, but I think there's lots of people choosing to wear them and lots of people who aren't really wearing them at this stage of the pandemic.
Yeah, I'm not seeing a lot of uptake on the mask wearing, although sometimes you encounter an occasional business where it seems their clientele, for whatever reason, is more invested in that. Jake, I want to bring you into the conversation. What are you seeing about COVID-19 in Northern Illinois, and what are health officials up there saying?
Yeah, so here in Chicago, our daily cases this week are slightly down, actually. And hospitalizations are down a bit too. We're at about 805 daily cases right now. But what we're seeing is kind of hovering around this high risk level. Chicago and Cook County have been in and out of this high risk level for the last couple of weeks. And we're kind of a little more firmly in the high level now. But it's kind of unclear where exactly we're heading. There's no huge spike at the moment. There is, elsewhere, a jump in the positivity rate. We're at around 11% right now, as opposed to around 5% in early June. But that might have something to do with schools closing and not testing their students so often as well. Ask for masks when I walk around Chicago. I see some for sure, and it definitely depends on the kind of space. There's a bookstore I like near my house that requires them still, but a lot of spaces I see don't have many masks in them. And I think that's something that Chicago this week with Lollapalooza coming, hundreds of thousands of people coming into our city, getting close to one another as they listen to music. That's something that, I think might be worth paying attention to going forward.
Yeah, interesting. I know last year we were talking about vaccine requirements, and there were those stories about people, holding up fake vaccine cards to get into Lollapalooza, Jake. I don't know if you can speak to whether that's a requirement, but maybe it's not. It doesn't even really matter this year in terms of, what's happening at Lollapalooza, just because, or in terms of, I should say, like a vaccine requirement, because this latest, the dominant variant right now, can just evade a vaccine, at least for spread, right? It still protects against severe disease. I'll let you, I don't know if you can speak to the Lollapalooza protocols though.
Yeah, I don't think there is a vaccine requirement for Lollapalooza. I'm not entirely sure on that, but I'm covering it this week, planning to wear a mask to it, but I definitely wasn't asked to show a vax card.
Yeah, right. So are, Meredith, let me ask you about, back in Metro East, are hospitals seeing a rise in cases in your area?
Yes. So, specifically in St. Clair County, the CDC's latest update said there were 10.4 new COVID-related hospital admissions per 100,000 people. And for context, the baseline for that metric is 10 admissions when the case rate is 200 or higher, which it is in St. Clair County. And 4.4% of staffed inpatient hospital beds are currently being used by COVID patients in the area right now. In neighboring Madison County, the case rate is actually a little bit lower than St. Clair's, but the new admissions rate is 12.7, and more than 7% of staffed inpatient beds are being used by COVID patients in that area. So as the COVID community levels indicate the strain COVID puts on the healthcare system, I think it's safe to say that there are several counties where hospitals are struggling with COVID in the area right now.
Jake, what about that picture in Chicago in terms of hospitalizations?
Yeah, it's definitely something that is in our hospitals, but it's not like in other points of the pandemic, severely limiting their ability to function. What we're seeing is, as I said earlier, there's a decline in daily hospitalizations, week over week at the moment, but 17% of ICU beds in Chicago are available, and 70% of our ventilators are too. And Chicago is a good bit under the 10% goal of hospital beds occupied by COVID-19 patients. We're at around 4.5%. So, it's definitely, again, something that is affecting hospitals, but it's not totally crippling their ability to function by any means.
And that's what that, as I mentioned, that sort of newer, just this year metric that the CDC uses of community level, not community transmission level, but just community level, that takes into account hospitalization. All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. Listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about COVID-19. A little later, we'll be talking about monkeypox with a panel of reporters. Meredith Howard is with the Belleville News Democrat, Jake Sheridan, the Chicago Tribune. And now I want to bring Steph Whiteside into the conversation, who covers this stuff for Side Effects Public Media and WSIU, a public media station in Carbondale, Illinois. And Steph, you've been writing about long COVID, and a lot of people who do get COVID, you know, this is certainly a big concern for people. You'd ask people, why are you still masking? Why are you still playing it extra cautious? Long COVID is something they're worried about. Can you just talk a little bit about what we know, where we are with the long COVID aspect of this pandemic?
Sure. So I think the answer is that we're all still learning. I recently spoke with a doctor from SIU School of Medicine's post-COVID recovery clinic, excuse me. And one of the things we talked about was the challenge that they are facing, because everybody is learning about this in real time, which is difficult for doctors and also patients, because doctors, you know, they can't offer a roadmap. They can't say, this is what we expect to see in a year, 5 years, 10 years out from this. Nobody knows yet.
How do people, maybe we can just say a little bit of like, what is long COVID, right? If somebody has like symptoms, you know, how do you define long COVID? How does somebody know that maybe they do have long COVID symptoms, or they're just maybe suffering from a different illness or something?
Right. Well, long COVID is, I believe, if people are still having symptoms 4 weeks after the acute infection, but you hear from patients that in some cases they're having symptoms for more than a year, or they're developing other post-viral syndromes like chronic fatigue syndrome, for example, that can happen after any virus, including COVID in this case. And symptoms are things like brain fog, trouble concentrating, issues with mood, anxiety, or depression, as well as can be physical issues with heart trouble, breathing trouble, blood sugar, and of course, the one that we used to hear a lot more about, loss of taste and smell.
And you recently wrote an article for Side Effects, sort of looking at some of the clinics that help treat people suffering from long COVID. Can you talk a little bit more about those clinics?
Yeah, so there are at least 60 in the United States, and I think that number is growing quite rapidly, so it could be out of date by the time I say it. In almost every state, in the United States now has at least one post-COVID clinic. And these are generally multidisciplinary clinics because in part, you know, the symptoms of long COVID, they're not just affecting one area of the body, which can make it challenging for patients to get answers too, because they might have been sent to a neurologist, a cardiologist, different doctors looking at one symptom in isolation, but not really the big picture. And that's part of what these clinics are designed to do, is to bring together multidisciplinary teams. They can kind of look at all these things together.
And you talk with Vithya Sundaresan, I know, for your story, who's a friend of the show. She's been on many times in the past to talk about COVID-19. This is one of the long COVID clinics is in Springfield, right?
Yes, they're in Springfield, though they are also offering telehealth for the Southern Illinois region, because we don't obviously have as many resources in some of the rural parts of the state.
So how does that work? If somebody feels like they have these diseases, how do they go about accessing this, you know, sort of specialized care for what, you know, if somebody thinks they might have long COVID?
Well, the first step is always, I think, to go to the primary care physician and look for a referral to a post-COVID clinic. For people in the Southern Illinois region, they can also contact like the SIU School of Medicine's clinic directly. But there are also web resources that cover groups that are listing clinics sort of state and nationwide. One is Survivor Corps, which is at survivorcorps.com, and they have a map with a list where people can go and find where there might be a post-COVID clinic close to them, and hopefully get in touch.
Sure. And as you're continuing to follow this issue, and we need to take a break on the show here in about a minute or so, but what are you looking for? What's sort of next in terms of long COVID as, you know, as a healthcare sort of, I guess, as an issue for individual people, but also as like a broad public health problem?
So one of the things that I'm actually currently doing some reporting on is looking at the impact long COVID is having on patients with some of these post-viral illnesses, like chronic fatigue, because there are already communities of patients that haven't gotten a lot of attention. So there is some hope that the research money that Congress has given to the NIH may actually benefit a far larger pool of patients because of the attention that COVID has brought. I hate to use the phrase silver lining, but for some people, it's kind of what they're hoping it is.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, because you have heard people saying like they feel they couldn't get recognition from the healthcare system for things like chronic fatigue. And maybe now this has sort of woken people up to the reality of those illnesses. All right, Steph Whiteside with WSIU and Side Effects Public Media. I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us today on the 21st Show.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Meredith Howard and Jake Sheridan, respectively, of the Belleville News Democrat and the Chicago Tribune. I'm going to ask you to stick around. We're going to carry this conversation over the break, and we will talk about monkeypox when we come back. It is Illinois, Chicago in particular, has been described as an epicenter of this disease, which the World Health Organization just in the last few days declared as a global health emergency. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455, or tweet us anytime at 21st Show. More to come on the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking today about two disease threats that are still very much relevant to us here in Illinois. We spent the first part of this conversation talking about COVID-19, and we're going to turn now to the disease known as monkeypox. This is a virus. It's similar to smallpox. Smallpox, of course, was pretty much globally eliminated in 1980, thanks to global vaccination efforts. It's not as transmissible as that disease, but there are concerns that it could mutate and become a greater threat. People who get monkeypox, the symptoms can include fever, headaches, muscle aches, lack of energy, a rash that looks kind of like pimples or these blisters filled with pus on the body. Most people, the CDC says 99% of people infected by monkeypox would be likely to survive, but it can be fatal for people with compromised immune systems, those who are pregnant or breastfeeding, and children under the age of 8. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455, or tweet us at 21st Show. We're talking about this with Jake Sheridan, reporter at the Chicago Tribune, and Meredith Howard, service journalist for the Belleville News Democrat in the Metro East, sort of the St. Louis part of Illinois. Jake, you've been covering monkeypox in the Chicago area. Talk a little bit about what we know about monkeypox, how it spreads, who it's affecting.
Yeah, so we're learning more and more, but I'll start with who it's affecting. So monkeypox right now is predominantly affecting men who have sex with men here in Chicago. That's bi men, that's gay men, that's trans folks as well. And it's spreading right now often through intimate physical contact. And I want to preface this by saying this is not a gay disease. Every medical expert I've talked to has made that very clear to me. This can spread throughout the body and spread by other kinds of physical contact too, whether that's sharing a towel or a hug or something like that. But right now it's often spreading through sex. And health experts are saying to me that that's because the gay community and the LGBTQ plus community is pretty close knit. And so that's leading to a lot of transmission among men who have sex with men. So it spreads predominantly through contact with those rashes that you were describing earlier. And so that's kind of the really unique symptom of monkeypox that we're seeing. And those have been described to me as incredibly painful. Something that you really don't want to get. And when you make contact with those rashes, that's predominantly how the virus gets passed on.
Yeah, so it's important to differentiate. This is not like COVID where it spread through sort of airborne, you're breathing the same air as someone. It really requires, and I heard this phrase I was listening to a long time listeners will know, everybody take a drink, the virology podcast I often listen to, where they talked about not only intimate contact, but even just as little as kissing or cuddling. And he specifically used that phrase, cuddling, can cause this virus to spread just through physical, but it has to be sort of physical contact, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. And I think also this is something that, you know, we're learning more and more about. This disease has existed among humans since 1970. But, you know, we're also getting a new sense of how it might be spreading. This is kind of not the first outbreak in America, but a really novel and heightened level of transmission. So, you know, while that's definitely true, it's the physical contact, we are still learning more and more about this.
Okay. Meredith, I want to ask you, St. Clair County recently reported its first case of monkeypox. What can you tell us about that?
Yes. So the St. Clair County Health Department has announced one probable monkeypox case so far, and as of Friday said that it hasn't yet been confirmed by the CDC. The probable case was likely related to domestic travel, the department said, and the person who was infected didn't have much contact with the public. So they said there's not a large public health threat of monkeypox in the county at this time. No additional cases have been identified yet.
And I mean, given that it's one, it's not even confirmed case, but one probable case, are health officials sort of mounting any sort of official response there?
So there was some contact tracing. The local health department did, of course, contact the people who had been around the infected person and also provided those people with the vaccine. So St. Clair County has received 100 doses of the monkeypox vaccine so far. And of course, to be fully vaccinated, you require 2 doses. So that's enough to fully vaccinate 50 people. So officials are in the process of distributing those remaining doses to providers who serve the populations that IDPH identifies as high risk.
50 people in St. Clair County, which, if listeners are not familiar, is the second most populous metropolitan area in the state of Illinois after Chicago. Jake, in Chicago, I understand, has its own demand issues with the vaccine. How's that going up there?
Yeah, there's just not enough vaccine here. And there's not really going to be enough vaccine anytime too soon. So what's happening now is the vaccine supply that Chicago has had thus far, around 5,600 doses, has been distributed to different vaccinator sites and used by the Chicago Department of Public Health. We're getting more vaccines. This weekend, we were expected to get 15,000 from the federal government and another 3,000 from the state. You know, that's not going to be enough either. We've got tens of thousands of men who have sex with men, not to mention the other communities that could soon face a monkeypox spread themselves. But basically how it's working right now is with those new vaccines, the Chicago Public Health Department is going to focus on giving as many people as possible that first dose. For a lot of people, they're not going to be scheduling that second shot yet. They're going to make exceptions for people who have had direct contact with someone who's had monkeypox, and for immunocompromised folks as well. You know, they want to get as many people vaccinated as possible. And, you know, they're definitely hoping that the 1,000,000+ doses that the federal government has ordered will start rolling in. You know, we have market days coming up. That's going to bring in probably around 300,000 people. That's a street festival in North Halsted that caters to the LGBTQ+ community. So that's, I think, the first weekend of August. It's really important to get as many people vaccinated to help build up immunity to monkeypox as soon as possible. But there's just not enough shots right now.
We had a question from a listener via text message, wanted to know about monkeypox and public surfaces like door handles, toilet seats, that sort of thing. Is there transmission possible from those sources? Jake, I wonder if your reporting has, you know, if you've learned anything about that in your reporting on this.
Yeah, you know, in my reporting, I learned of one case that someone was telling me about where a friend of theirs got it by sharing a towel. That's definitely a more intimate type of contact than touching a doorknob. you know, it's not totally clear to me yet in my reporting what level of public contact could lead to monkeypox transmission. I think that's definitely something we're learning more about and definitely need to keep an eye on moving forward.
Suddenly, I don't feel so crazy for being the one guy who always uses the paper towel to open the door handle, though. last thing, and we need to wrap this conversation here in a moment, but Jake, you alluded to this is not the first experience America and Illinois has had with a monkeypox. There was an outbreak back in 2003. What can you tell us about that and you know, whether how that's different from what we're going through now?
Yeah, so back in 2003, some exotic mammals were brought over from Africa. And those mammals interacted with prairie dogs here in the Midwest and infected those prairie dogs. And 47 people who had contact with the prairie dogs that were infected with monkeypox got sick. And that included Illinois. They had all had contact with those animals. That spread led to a ban on importing African rodents. But while monkeypox has been here, it hasn't really spread through American communities like it's doing right now on this scale and kind of with this person-to-person contact in a really heightened way.
All right. Well, this is something we will certainly continue to keep an eye on, as I know you will. Jake Sheridan with the Chicago Tribune, Meredith Howard, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your reporting with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.